This is Kofi Dake once again with the Uplift podcast. Today we have a very special guest in our midst, in the person of Dr. Gifty Enyonam Ketempi. Here we're going to be discussing a topic on the quality of education, diving deep into Africa, mostly a critical discourse on African schools. So we're going to examine the education in Africa, particularly for our use examples mostly in Ghana, West Africa, and we're going to highlight the challenges and opportunities facing schools across the continent. A little bit about Doctor, you're welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ben.
It's a pleasure and honor to have you here, and I know we spoke intensively before this podcast. I would like to run through on a high level your biography. Doctor Ketempi is an esteemed academician affiliated with the University of Professional Studies in Accra, where she has over a decade of teaching and mentoring students. In addition to her academic responsibility, also she's a co-founder of Post Reset Consult Limited, an organization that specializes in providing consultancy and training in quality management, where she holds the position of Director of Operations and Program Excellence. Moreover, she also co-founded and currently manages Babla Couture, a Ghanaian enterprise that focuses on offering ready-made clothing for women. Her professional endeavors reflect her overreaching passion for the promoting of quality education aimed at advancing the common good, engaging in critical causes on quality enhancement in Africa, and also exploring developments within the fashion industry. You are welcome, Doctor, again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Would you like to add anything else to your biography that I might have missed?
No, I think that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah. So I was thinking about the education in Africa. Me, myself, being educated in Africa up to the senior secondary level, and then also did some tertiary and then also further education outside. But on a high level, the landscape of education in Africa, statistically, what would you say about the literacy rates years before versus what we have now?
I'll say that our literacy rates, we've been growing quite steadily, not too fast, quite slowly. Currently, when you look at the global south, our literacy rate falls somewhere within 67.7%. Globally, they are looking at figures around 87. We still have quite a long way to go if we are to catch up. I'll say that per the statistics, somewhere within around 2019, we saw an increase of 0.73%. That was from 67.41%. And then it went on steadily. So we have something around in the year 2020, we have something around 0.17% increment. And then 2000 to 2001, we saw a 0.04%. That was quite low. And then in 2022, we saw an increment of 0.12%. So I'll say that we've made small, but I'll call them meaningful. They have been small, but adding up. So far, we've not retrogressed, and I think that's the most important thing. So slow increments here and there.
So, you know, like I remember, there used to be a gender disparity when it comes to educating, especially educating the girl child. And there were situations where the girls didn't have the equal privilege or the opportunity to go to school as men. How what do you want to speak on that versus how it was and now? Have we seen any improvement at all?
There is still gender disparity. I think that even in the global north, there are issues of gender disparity. And we see that also in the global south, I mean, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. Those things continue to exist. With the statistics across the region, we see that for girls in particular, between the ages of 9 and 11, we see, as compared to the boys, about 9 million girls are not in school, as compared to 6 million on the part of the boys. And then we also see that for girls generally not being in school, we see some 23% of that, especially at the primary level. So about 20% of girls are not in the primary level. And this has a multiplying effect. So when you go to the upper levels, the institution of higher learning, higher education, etc., the gaps further widen. So yeah, those things still persist within our context in the global south. And I must say that there have been some efforts to get there. Girl child to stay in school, and more effort is needed to get the girl child to continue to stay in school. I mean, we have to do a lot more because even when you look at the Ghana statistical data, at the lower level, girls are normally a lot higher. Their figures in school are normally a lot higher at the lower level, but as they climb up, they are some challenges, some obstacles that we see as they climb up. So they tend to drop out of school. So we see that a lot.
They drop off. Yeah. So there is definitely more work that needs to be done to try and eradicate that gender disparity when it comes to education. So some of the challenges that caused that apart from the cultural stigma that we have, and people thought like girls are just supposed to be at home and be homemakers and, you know, kind of nurtured for that. Apart from that, how is access to schooling or schools a challenge also? Does that contribute that? But I would think if it does, it should go for both girls and boys as well.
Yes, we have issues with access. Even in Ghana, we have a lot of issues with access. According to UNESCO, about 20% of children between the ages of 6 to 11, that is one third of young people that are out of school, right?
Yeah.
So UNESCO is reporting that. And then they are also saying that for the youth, nearly 60%, that is between the ages of 15 and 17, are also out of school. So that is very alarming. That is quite alarming.
Yeah.
And that is not just girls. That is both sex. So both boys and girls. And yeah, if we want to keep them in school, then we have to do what we have to do as a continent and also as a country.
Yeah.
And to be able to keep these kids in school, which is very important.
Yeah. It's very interesting because I believe this burden of providing education in school shouldn't only be on the government, heavily on the government. And we've seen over the years, individuals or even some institution organization try to help establish some form of schools, build schools. I know somebody like one of the comedian in the U.S., Blackson, he built a very nice school, though there were some challenges there. But how do you see government encouraging individuals or city institution to kind of help out with that? Do they create a friendly environment to easily do that, or there are still some challenges?
And Ghana, and also in Africa, I think in Ghana, I'll say that we have very nice policies. With the new government, when they came on board, they had a committee that is supposed to look into the quality of education. We have very good policies, I would say. but the implementation of those policies. Then again, I must say that there are nuances across the continent, because it's not just Ghana, or what happens in Ghana is not reflective of what happens in the other parts of Africa. So right. There are nuances here and there. But I think that largely in our context, we could talk about issues of implementations of such policies and if we are able to enforce such policies, because we have initiatives that target even something like technology to children, one laptop per child. We have so many initiatives that target the young ones to get them to stay in school from a very young age. Yes. So I would say that more of implementation and also finance. Uh-huh. Funds play a huge role in our part of the world. And a lot of the time, governments looking at all the other sectors that they must invest in, which sometimes makes sense. Not so much fund is dedicated to education. So then I think that the funds has to go. And then for the individuals that want to help, government has a lot of roles to play in trying to get individuals to come on board, creating the friendly environment where the laws are too rigid. Then we must ask ourselves some questions around those laws. How do we make it easy for a group of people to come in and actually help us to enhance the quality of education that we have? Because I think there are a lot of people, Africans and also people from the diaspora that have been helping with Ghana's education, that are very invested in Ghana's education.
Yes. And
if we'll be able to remove the frustrations, the obstacles from their path, especially with regards to corruption. People in their offices are not asking for brown envelopes before they do one thing or the other. If we are able to help that, then I think that a lot more organizations and also a lot more individuals will be willing to come in and then help push the agenda of the quality education. I think that would help, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And yes, just to give kudos to the individuals that have taken up the mantle of establishing schools. Yes, I have a friend also who's done one and also incorporated technology where the kids learn technology right from the primary level. So that is really good. But we have to continue to emphasize the importance of the quality of education that we need as a foundation for sustainable development also, and also economic growth, as well as social progress in Africa. And thank you for voices such as yours that continue to speak out and also nature. So in what are some of their educational initiatives across the continent or in Ghana, that's in terms of innovation, maybe technology or community-based programs, have you seen that are going on to improve the quality of education?
Across the continent, yes, there are some programs that individuals and also organizations are doing to be able to improve the quality of education. One of those that I was involved in, it's a platform created by MasterCard Foundation. They call it the Baobao platform. And basically, it's supposed to help match students, especially young people, with professionals within the academic space, to provide these young people with mentorship. So these young people, if it's about education, if it's on a business that you've started and then you want mentorship, they pair you with mentors. So I serve as a mentor on the program to be able to mentor some few ladies.
Is that what you do? Is that what you do with the organization that you co-founded, Post Reset Consults?
No. So this was a personal thing. Some organization wrote to me and asked me to mentor some students. Then I got to realize that it was the MasterCard Foundation. They were the brain behind it. So they basically created a platform to bring mentors and mentees together to provide mentorship for young people. And then also training. So they provide training in different disciplines, from the soft skills to the technical skills that students require to be able to, and then also young people require to be able to enhance their everyday life and then also their businesses, as well as their learning experiences. And I think that it's a very great platform, bringing academics together, bringing corporates together, and then also young people to learn from all these people. And then we also have the campaign for female education. We have it in Ghana, we have it in Zimbabwe, I think Malawi. That is promoting girl child education. It's almost at the grassroots, right? How to get girls at the grassroots to pursue education, to stay in school by providing them with so many benefits, from financial benefits to mentorship and what have you. So I think that it's also a great initiative. We've heard about institutions such as the Room to Read, that is also in countries such as South Africa and Tanzania. Young people, as well as organizations across Africa, are doing very great things. Promote the agenda of quality education. There are so many initiatives that are happening in the space of Africa. The African Leadership Academy is also there, providing internship and mentorship for young people, intensive programs. And then we also, for the teachers are also not left out. Mm-hmm. We have the teacher education in sub-Saharan Africa. That also helps teachers to develop their teaching skills, equip them with technological skills, professional skills, and what have you. So there are so many programs across Africa that are helping young people, be it from organizations or be it from individuals.
Yeah, that's very impressive. You know, all the NGOs and also the government initiatives, the government support from government leaders and also local leaders in supporting these initiatives. But also, I'm glad that you did mention the international organizations such as MasterCards, you know, the supporting all the educational development in Africa. One thing that I remember growing up that time, technology was being introduced mostly into the schools. So, but now when you look at so many young students in Africa, they're exposed to the technology. Okay, so which actually bridges the digital gap and then expanding the access to education, even to remote areas. You have the deployment of online courses and digital literacy, which I believe is empowering many African students. You think same way as well?
Yeah, I mean, technology, it's doing wonderful things across education. I did my thesis, my PhD thesis, in how we can assure the quality of technology within the higher educational space. I would say that technology has basically come to, as you said, bridge the divide. So when we look at the economic gap, if we are able to deploy technology very well, it's supposed to bridge these gaps, and then also geographical issues pertaining to how do we get vision or create access in our villages, in our townships, etc., etc. Basically, technology has just come to make us one. So there is no rich, there is no poor. And then also the issue of inclusion. So technology is there to make it possible for people that are living with disability to be able to also have access to education. So I think that technology can do so much. But then in our part of the world, again, in the global south, we are faced with so many challenges when it comes to the deployment of technology. So what it's supposed to do for us as a people, that we are unable to get the full benefit of it, if you ask me, because we have so many challenges. Again, Africa is not just one homogeneous group. There are nuances across the divide. So when you move from one country to the other, the challenges differ. But then there are some commonalities when you look at Africa as a contest. And also in Ghana, we have so many challenges. I tend to say that from my dissertation, I think my conclusion when it came to the use of technology in the educational landscape, what came to me is that we are not ready as a people to fully deploy technology and also get its benefits. I think we are not ready because of the many challenges that face us. But if we are able to overcome those challenges, then of course it will do very
well.
Important things for us.
Yes. So talking about addressing those challenges or bridging the gap. So obviously we need to continue to encourage both government and also private or NGOs to continue to adequately fund some of these programs. And you did speak of the teacher training and also all the curriculum development too. But also, do you think we need some form of policy reforms to just try and probably increase funding or just create a platform that will foster or empower education?
I'll say that for technology in particular, one of the underlining in my thesis, I refer to them as generative mechanism. One of the first things that I identify was the fact that in our context, in the Ghanaian context, one of the basic thing that we lack is actually policy when it comes to e-learning. So the what brought e-learning, I wouldn't say what brought it, what brought the argument forth, because the argument has been there since the 1990, where there was a recommendation by the World Bank for Africa, especially Ghana, to introduce the use of technology into education, especially at the higher level. So those discussions have been there. Governments made a policy about one laptop per child. So those things have been there. But then I realized that at the base of it, we actually do not have any policy on how to integrate education. So what happened was that when COVID happened, we were in a mess. The institution that guide education, especially at the higher level, wrote to the universities and asked them to use appropriate technology. My question there was, what do we deem appropriate technology? Because we must define what appropriate means. The letter at the time did not have. So per my interviews, investigations, etc., I realized that as a country, even at the higher level, the institution in charge of technology and then also the other universities that I went to didn't have a policy for integrating technology into education. And once we do not have that, then it means that we cannot even have a discussion on it. The other thing that I also got was that because we have not made the investments and we were not ready, we were just basically waiting for COVID to be over so that we can go back to how we were doing things. So I think that even as a country, what I found was that in other countries in Africa, that South Africa, Kenya, etc., the discussions are a little different. But in Ghana, specifically, we are not ready for issues of e-learning. So I think that policy reform is at the base. I mean, and I honestly hope that the committee that they have formed to look into quality education We'll also be looking at the integration of technology and right. how a country, we can come out with a fully fledged policy, not just at a higher level, but also at the lower level, so that we can actually have a medium and then also a strategy to be able to implement implement technology, especially the quality side of it. When we talk about assuring the quality of it, make sure that we are actually implementing it and doing it well.
I think doing it safely will also be important, because you know all these cybersecurity things and you know cyberbullying. So it has to be done safely, securely for the children as well.
And then you realize that a lot of lecturers were kicking against it, because even with assessment, we're not able to get it right. Students were doing whatever, just copying online. Examinations were not as free and fair as we would want it to be. So even academics themselves, so even during COVID, lecturers were fighting that let's rather have students come in, let's space them out so that they write exams in school, not through the online means, because assuring quality of the e-assessment was also a huge issue. So we actually have a lot to do if we want to deploy it fully. We have a lot.
Yeah. So that definitely needs a social change. Technology is one of the social changes that we do see in so many countries. And I think it's good if it's embraced also and then work towards implementing that in the schools. One other thing that I wanted to talk about also is the importance of investing in STEM education, which is a science. The vocational training as well, and also entrepreneurship programs to prep students for the future job market. Also, to just be competitive with real life once they get into the real life after school. What's your intake on these programs?
I always tell my students that get a skill. I teach at the higher level. Students, let me say per how we are raised at home, receive the vocational skills and then also vocational education to be the reserved for those that we perceive to be not intelligent, right? Those that we perceive to be not intelligent. And then I always tell them that get a skill, because that when I realized that skill was important, I'd already used a lot of my free time doing things that were not important. And then all of a sudden, I'm doing a PhD, and then I'm telling myself that I want to go and learn how to make clothes, which was almost impossible because I was always reading and always writing. But if I'd discovered that earlier, when I was probably in the polytechnic or when I was doing my first degree, then I would have said that, because then I had time, right? I had time to go and get a skill. So I always tell my students to get a skill.
A skill. So do you think that the educational system is more theoretically based, and you think they should incorporate some more practical courses? Because if you look at a lot of developments or people who just did certain, how to call it, who invented something or just did something transformational, right? You would see that they have certain skills to be able to do that. It's not necessary. They might not necessarily be very highly educated in terms of getting like maybe a master's or something like that, but they have the certain skill sets. Like you see it also in things like IT. There's people tend to be interested in candidates that have hands-on or practical experience and then some certification, you know, who can actually do the work. So do you think that is something that is lacking in the African education system? It's more theoretically based?
I will say yes and no, because when I was younger, we have this life skill. It was a course that we took as young students, basically equipping us with sewing, equipping us with crocheting, and we had farming, and then we also had cooking.
Technical skills, vocational skills.
There were so many things that we learned. And then now life skill has been taken off the curricula. I also hope that is one of the things that they are discussing to bring back. But then Ghana has made strides in terms of vocational skills. So we have a lot of vocational skills across the country, just as STEM, across the system regions. There are institutions that are in charge, and I think we are doing some good work there. But before we can get people to want to be in such spaces, especially when we talk about the vocational training, then we must start with mindsets change.
Okay.
Because at the base, there are just a lot of young people that do not want to be in such a space. Because as I said, we tend to socialize young people to think that such skills are for the uneducated. So then they do not want to be in such spaces. But then if we can change their mindsets, if we are able to consciously and then intentionally create that awareness that it's not just going into the university, that it's and doing a business related course, maybe marketing or accounting, as we have most people doing nowadays, that it's a gainful employment, that your ability to get into other unconventional spaces that you think are not for the intelligent people. And if you are able to use your degree, the degree that you've earned in marketing, in accounting, and in whatever, to add to these skills, then the sky is not even the limit.
Yeah.
The sky is not even the limit. So it's our ability to reform this children. And it has to start at the base. It has to start at the base to get them interested in such fields. Field trips to the garages, field trips to the farm, field trips to, and then we make it a lot more relatable for them and make them understand that. And then also, I would say that we organize a lot of programs for our students, but I think where we have failed is that we always, in organizing those programs, we always bring politicians, we always bring people in corporate and finance, the banking industry, in manufacturing, etc. But we have largely failed to bring people from the so-called sectors that we think are for the illiterates, the vocational skills, someone who has made a name being a chef, someone who has made a name being a mechanic, someone who has made a name being a hairdresser, etc. So we've not brought those people to their space for them to see what having a vocational skills can actually do for them. So I think that for the policy reform, we need to look at the base. How do we re-educate, get them to relearn what they've already learned and what they already know about vocational skills? How do we get them to change that?
That's a great point that you made over there. And also, it reminds me of even sports. You know, growing up in the education system, I remember when I was in primary school and high school, then and I wanted to participate in football. You know, soccer. We call some people call soccer, but football. It was like I was told, it's either you play sports or you do academic. It wasn't structured in such a way that you could do both. And I look at my son right now who plays basketball, but the educational program promotes that. They still have the opportunity to enhance their skills playing basketball for the school team and stuff like that, but also be able to do the academic work. So they make that provisions for them. Hope that's something that also will be taken into consideration when they're making reforms in the educational system as well. Because as we know for sure that some sports, there are people who have done sports. Unfortunately, in Africa, they didn't have the opportunity to go to school, and there are some there's some of the most successful people that we know on the continent. You know, the list is long. Yes.
I hope so too, because I think one of the things that I always laughed about is that when I asked my son to learn, he says he doesn't want to learn. He's tired. He doesn't want to learn. Then I'll say that, well, if you don't learn, how are you going to become this? How are you going to become that? And he'll tell me that I will play football. So it's almost like, okay, if I want to be a footballer, I don't have to go to school.
Yeah, because that's the impression that has been created over the years. But you have people being drafted from colleges and high schools to go and play football. And it's imperative also for them to have the education to be able to know how to manage their money, their finances, when they make their money, doing the right investments and stuff like that. Yeah, I think education at all levels is very important. And the importance, just like you say, of those skill-based education, I think it also drives the nation in development. So what's next for you right now?
What's next for me? I was telling my students yesterday that they said, do PhD. It sounded so far away and so huge and all that. And now I'm done with it and I'm bored. It's almost like I'm bored and I want the next adventure. So I'm thinking about job change. I love what I do. I like to teach, but I also think that I'll do more at the policy level. So I'm thinking about that. And then I'm also thinking about going back to school, reading law, just because I'm bored. Read law. And then also in my profession, climb up. So it means more research for us as academics. Before you can move from one level to the next, you must publish and continue to publish. So just do that so that I can be able to grow in my field too. So, I mean, that's this for me. But my business, grow Babla Futo as much as I can.
Yeah, I see that on social media a lot. I see a lot of people, a lot of young ladies actually modeling in the clothes, in outfit, mostly African outfits, and they look very nice. Yeah, yeah. So speak more about that.
So Babla Futo, I think I've always known that I wanted to be in the fashion space, because when I was young, I wanted to model. And then coming from a Christian background, I was discouraged. You know, African parents. Godly, it was ungodly. You cannot do that as a God's child and all that. So I got discouraged from it. I didn't go into modeling. I took a different career path. And then quite recently, I was like, what am I doing? I love fashion. I love to look good. I like to dress well. When I put on a dress, everybody is asking, where did you buy it from, etc. So we started, a friend and another person, we came together. And then we said, well, let's start something and see how it goes. And almost 2 years down the line, I think it's been great. The experience has been great. It's been hard, but at the same time, I'm enjoying it. It's different. Experience is different from teaching young people. It's actually getting to experience what we tell our students about, you know, in class, and you tell them about the difficulties with working with other people. You tell them about the difficulties with dealing with clients, how you should handle your clients, how you should handle your human resource. Actually getting to live it, and it's been a good experience, I would say. It's just that in Ghana, as small businesses and also as Ghanaian businesses, you actually do not have so much support from the state, from government. They support more of the foreign companies than when we talk about the local companies. But in our own I think it's been good, and we are not stopping anytime soon. So, yes. Wow, that's Babla Puto. I totally love the experience.
Yeah, keep up the good work. Yeah, it's very impressive the work you guys do over there. The doctor, I always like to use this platform to highlight many good things happening in Africa, particularly, and to use people's story, such as yours, to uplift people. So what's your final uplifting story for people who have or intend to give up on Africa?
It's funny because I have some friends who have left Africa. I don't blame them. For the past years, things have been hard, especially in Ghana. So I actually do not blame those who want to leave. But the question that I always ask is, you are going to a place that is already built, and it's the people there that have built it, and you just go in there and you're going to work there for someone and all that. Who do you want to build Africa for you? Okay. Right. That's the question that I always ask, because it will take me and every other African to make Africa work. No one from anywhere is coming to build Africa for us. It's not going to happen like they carry us out of Africa, build it for us, and then they carry us back into Africa. It's not going to work like that. So it will take our collective efforts to be able to make Africa work. So I always ask that question. If you leave, who would build Africa for us? Because I think that although with businesses do not have government support, we have the freedom to build business here. You have the freedom to make mistakes, and then you also have the ability to grow. Africa is not so rigid, or let me say Ghana is not so rigid.
Yes.
So there is room to make all your mistakes, there is room to commit all the flaws, and then there is room to build. Actually, I say that we have a lot of problems, and all those challenges and all those problems are money, because once you solve them, you are making money. You are creating businesses to be able to solve such problems. Yes. So I want to go into a space that almost all problems are solved, right? So I'll say stay in Africa and let's build Africa, because there is so much for us to do here. And sometimes I think it's just fun when, like the discussion I had with my student this afternoon, they realized that our problems can be solved if only we collectively come together and then push our leaders to do so. Because a lot of the times what I get from us as Africans is that it's much easier for us to post religious quotes than actually speak on government issues and then also social issues. So yes, we run away from those discussions and then to post religious issues. But I always say that how do we get something resolved if we are all not talking about it? Because what our politicians fear is losing the next election. So let's get our voice out there. Let's get our voices heard. Let's get them to work for us, because that is why we elect them. But not really running away from Africa, because if we all live there, of course, nothing will change. And as Africans, we must continue to educate ourselves, learn and always unlearn about some of the things that has kept us, bondage. Hold us down. So at all times, let's hold our leaders accountable. That is what I can say. And engagement is key. Speaking, don't be silent. Speak, even if it's a post on your social media, your WhatsApp status, your Facebook. Say something so that we can collectively build the Africa that we all want.
Yes. So building the Africa that we all want, it's a responsibility of all of us. Those in the diaspora, those in Africa, wherever you might find yourself, if you are from Afro origin, it's our responsibility to build it. We have all the good things in Africa. Yes, resources and everything. Additionally, I would like to call to action, urging our viewers and all supporters to support organizations working to improve education quality in Africa, and also advocate for greater investment in the future of the continent. Yes, Dr. Kifty Ketemepi, I would like to thank you for making time and sharing your insights on education quality, which is a critical discourse on African schools. Finally, how do listeners get hold of you or follow your work? You have any social media platforms or what you'd like to share?
Okay, so for my businesses, we are Bablakuto on Facebook, Bablakuto on Instagram, and then also Bablakuto on TikTok. And then I also have a podcast, what I call it a podcast, that talks about Ewe, that is my native language. And then another one that talks about social issues. So I have professional Ewes on YouTube, and then I also have the Sassy Girl Talk, yeah. Sassy Girl on also on YouTube. And then for post consults, post research, we are into providing quality solutions for companies. So any company that is in need of ISO training, any training in quality management, we are there to help. So post research is also on Facebook and also on Twitter, and you can meet us here. We are there, right? For my personal Facebook page, I'm a Ketemepi on Facebook.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute honor and pleasure to have you as our special guest here on this podcast. I hope to bring you back soon so that on this platform, so we can discuss other topics. We spoke at length and there's a lot to discuss. But also, I would like to end with this quote from Nelson Mandela, Madiba. And I quote, "Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. So let us never give up." To our listeners, a big thank you for staying tuned with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Uplift Chronicles again. And please leave us your feedback on our social media platforms, YouTube or podcasts, Spotify and others. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Uplift Chronicles. I hope you found inspiration in today's stories and the spirit of upliftment. Remember, every life has the power to inspire change, and every story is a thread in the rich tapestry of our shared heritage. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly subscribe and leave a review, and share it with someone who could use a little upliftment in their life. Follow us on social media for more updates and join the conversation. Until next time, keep uplifting and stay inspired. Signing off, this is Kofi Dake.